Part A. Directions. In Part A, you will hear short conversations between two people. After each conversation, you will hear a question about the conversation. The conversations and questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Number 1.
Boy, was that such a heated discussion. I never thought our friends would have strong feelings for politics.
Yeah. It almost seemed every single opinion from someone touched someone else's nerve.
What does the woman mean? Number 2.
Why don't you join us to Arizona for a white river rafting trip for today's?
Not in this lifetime. Have you forgotten what happened when you took me to Salt River Canyon?
What does the man imply? Number 3.
How come the sky turned so suddenly? And here I am, forgetting my umbrella again. Perfect.
Look, James. The library is a few hundred feet away. We'll make it for sure.
What can be inferred about the weather? Number 4.
Thanks for getting this book for me, Marty. How much do I owe you?
Nothing. Remember the tickets for jazz concert you bought a few days ago?
What does the man imply? Number 5.
I kind of expected you'd move to another room. You and Mia don't seem compatible to each other.
To be honest, we never had any issue. It's just we don't share any common interest.
What can be inferred about the woman? Number 6.
I think I'll pick out this coat. The color is great and the price can't be any more right.
But what about the weight? This winter will only get more severe in the coming weeks.
What does the man imply about the coat? Number 7.
This book looks interesting and it's half off. What do you think?
You won't have time to read it now that you got your hands full with your biology paper.
What will the woman probably do? Number 8.
Do you think I need to buy a mini robot vacuum? I know I often make a mess in my room, but I don't like spending my savings, especially now.
I suppose it's a worthwhile investment.
What does the woman mean? Number 9.
How do you like your new place? Harry told me it's nice.
Yeah, I like the apartment. But after a month there, I begin to wonder if I can afford it for long.
What does the man imply? Number 10.
I was wondering if you want to go to the movies this weekend.
Oh, I'm sorry, Peter. I'd really love to, but I already have a dinner plan with Harry. Another time, perhaps?
What does the woman mean? Number 11.
Did you see Anna this morning? She was flaunting a new haircut.
Yeah. She seems to be trying to get attention from the sophomores. Hardly anyone has noticed, though.
What does the woman mean? Number 12.
I submitted one of my poetries about nature for the campus magazine's contest.
If it's anything like those that you've shown me, I'm sure you'll come out on top easily.
What does the man mean? Number 13.
Did you get covered by your auto insurance when your car was hit in the parking lot a month ago?
No, I never looked into it.
What does the woman mean? Number 14.
I have a good feeling that Johnny will win the photography contest.
You can't be serious, can you? Have you seen any of his photographs?
What does the man imply? Number 15.
Hey, Claire. You were in Dr. Lang's philosophy class last semester, weren't you? Any chance you could sell me the textbooks?
I kind of want to hold on to them for future reference.
What will the woman probably do? Number 16.
I can't believe I take the job as a part-time cashier when I already have to attend 5 classes this semester.
That's quite a load. Looks like I won't see you around as much as I did last semester.
What does the man mean? Number 17.
I did tell you that I wouldn't be joining you to Arizona if I haven't finished this project, didn't I? Well, guess what?
Who would know, right? Anyway, do you know a friend who would also enjoy rafting?
What will the woman probably do? Number 18.
You wouldn't spend a fortune on electricity if you didn't keep the AC running all day and night.
I know, all right, but my housemate will never agree to that.
What does the man mean? Number 19.
There'll be many of us going to that new Chinese restaurant tonight. Come with us.
Well, I'm in the mood for some tasty Kung Pao chicken anyway.
What does the woman imply? Number 20.
Stop worrying about me, Al. I'm perfectly fine.
But you look quite under the weather.
What does the man mean? Number 21.
Can you believe this fancy jacket is only $10? I sure am glad Black Friday is finally here.
Yeah, I myself still can't get over the massive price cut I got for these dresses.
What does the woman mean? Number 22.
What did Larry say about his house again? Is it the one before or after the intersection?
That's funny. I don't remember him mentioning any intersection.
What does the man imply? Number 23.
I just don't understand why my car had to break down now. I had a plane to catch at 9 a.m. sharp.
Let me drop you at the airport. It's on the same way to my office anyway.
What does the woman offer to do? Number 24.
I learn how to make many things in my applied art class. Today, for example, we try to make a small vase by hand.
That sounds interesting. What time does your applied art class meet again?
What can be inferred about the man? Number 25.
I just can't figure out what made Jennifer so angry to me.
I'm not sure either. Whatever it is, though, I bet she'll remain like that until you say you're sorry.
What does the woman imply? Number 26.
I'm going to bed early tonight, so I can wake up at 6 and come to class on time.
I guess I'd better do that too, huh? Maybe after reading a few pages of Jordan's book.
What can be inferred about the man? Number 27.
There's something wrong between Peter and Jane, isn't there? I saw her avoiding him yesterday.
I have no idea. But if I were you, I'd steer clear of it.
What does the woman mean? Number 28.
I didn't know you were here. I thought you'd be practicing with your fellow band members.
Well, apparently Josh, our drummer, is too sick to come.
What does the man imply? Number 29.
I keep putting off working on my thesis proposal.
Thank goodness I didn't drag my feet on that one.
What does the woman mean? Number 30.
The board just asked me to represent our major in the debate competition on Sunday. But I promised Sarah we'd shop for George's birthday gift this weekend.
Why don't you see if Sarah could postpone it for a couple of days?
What does the man suggest the woman do? End of part A. Part B. Directions. In Part B, you will hear longer conversations. After each conversation, you will be asked some questions. The conversations and questions will be spoken at just one time. They will not be written out for you, so you will have to listen carefully to understand and remember what the speaker says. When you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and decide which one would be the best answer to the question you have heard. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the problem and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Questions 31 to 35. Listen to a phone conversation between a woman and a professor.
I thought you were not coming, Lenny. I was about to leave for lunch.
I'm sorry, Professor Gordon. There was something I needed to take care of before coming here. I hope I hadn't wasted much of your time.
Well, the water is under the bridge now. The most important thing is you did make it coming here. So, have you thought about what I told you in the email?
Yes, about that. I'm happy that you found my project interesting, but I'm not sure about sending it to a conference. Perhaps you could explain it more to me.
So, I took the liberty of sharing your project with a few other people in the department. And all of us agreed that it was beyond what one could expect from an undergraduate student. It would certainly fit in as an appealing conference presentation.
Thank you. I guess it's because I have so much love for psychology. There are so many interesting things I can explore that I had really no idea about until this year. I wish I'd enrolled in the intro class since my first year.
Well, you've certainly made up for the lost time.
Thanks, Professor.
Does it mean you agree to submit your project to the psychology conference?
Honestly, I would really appreciate it if you could walk me through the details, like what I have to do. You know, I'm completely clueless as to how this thing works. The fact of the matter is I was quite surprised to find your email. Conference is an entirely new thing for me.
Well, to start with, you'll be given an advisor to guide you through all the steps. So you need not worry about not knowing anything. You do this over the summer. Students who participate sometimes decide to do an additional research to complement their presentation. But you can just focus on wrapping up what you've already done. Once you're happy with your writing, you can submit the abstract to the conference. Make sure to do it in September or before. You'll be notified whether or not it's accepted. If it is, you can proceed by creating a poster and preparing what you want to talk about your project.
Over the summer? I don't know, Professor. My advisor, Dr. Potter, suggested that I retake some of the classes from my first year this summer. My grades on those classes were far from satisfactory and they affect my GPA pretty badly.
That's a shame. Do you think you can talk to Dr. Potter to put it off until next semester? I do not want to force you to take a part in the conference, but you'll miss a great opportunity if you don't.
I will see what I can.
Number 31. Why does the woman love psychology? Number 32. What should the woman do before submitting her abstract? Number 33. What will the woman probably do after the conversation? Number 34. How does the professor react to the woman's coming late? Number 35. What do the professor's colleagues think about the woman's project? Questions 36 to 40. Listen to a conversation between a professor and her student.
Have a seat, John. Now, before you tell me what you come here for, let me just say that I'm proud to have you as a student. You always seem motivated in my agriculture class.
Thank you, Professor. I do have a long-term goal to work in agricultural science as soon as I graduate. There's a big opportunity there. You know, the world will always appreciate a better way to grow food.
That's true. We've had lots of progress since 1970, but there's so much more that can still be improved. You know, before I became a professor, I used to work with the U.S. government, helping them invent more cost-friendly ways to grow crops. I even teamed up with a few farmers in the proximity. We set up multiple crop rotation plans and applied them one by one to see which yielded the most crops in a year.
That's very nice, Professor. I would also love the chance to work in sustainable agriculture. Farms should be run for generations, not just a few years.
Well, that's easy to say, John. Most farmers I know do think about what to do with their farms in the long term, but they also have to make the ends meet.
Exactly. It's not uncommon to see a farm that has been growing one type of crop for so long that the soil can no longer keep up. Every year they get fewer yield, hence less money as well. But they seem to not have any choice.
That's what I meant. Farmers seldom want to risk changing to a new crop because they have no idea if it will do well in the market. You know, not all crops have high enough demand.
Actually, Professor, that's what I'm here for. I'd like to write about how we can help farmers choose which crop to grow, one that's not only new but also profitable. Do you think it'll make a good thesis?
I'm sure it will. However, you must narrow it down first. You have to focus on a certain problem within this topic. Either it's crop rotation, fertilization, irrigation, or other things that you're passionate to write about.
Well, about that, I haven't really made up my mind. I'd really appreciate any advice from you.
Why don't you come back here in my office at 3 p.m.? I have a class to teach in 10 minutes and I don't think this talk will end shortly. Should we continue?
Of course, Professor. Thank you.
Number 36. What did the professor do before she teaches at the university? Number 37. What is the result of planting only one type of crop all year round? Number 38. When does the professor's class start? Number 39. What does the professor compliment the man on? Number 40. Why does the man think there's a big opportunity in agricultural science? End of part B. Part C. Directions. In Part C, you will hear several talks. After each talk, you will be asked some questions. The talks and questions will be spoken at just one time. They will not be written out for you, so you will have to listen carefully to understand and remember what the speaker says. When you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and decide which one would be the best answer to the question you have heard. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the problem and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Question 41 to 45. Listen to a lecture delivered by a woman.
In the spring of 2010, a small group of entrepreneurs set out to change urban transportation across the United States. They began with a single modest system in Denver, and the concept has since expanded to more than 60 U.S. cities, including 9 of the 10 largest. Its biggest market is in New York City, where the system gets well over 1 million customer visits a month during peak season. If this were a startup, it would be a private equity darling. The CEO would be on the cover of Fast Company, praised as a bold, visionary captain of industry. It would be celebrated and debated for how it's changing the fabric of urban American life. But this is not Uber. In fact, it's not even a company. We're talking about bike share programs. Fleets of public rental bikes in a network of stations across a city or community that anyone can pay to use. But while Uber is hailed as a success, conversations about bike shares happen at the local, rather than national level. So why does it fail to become the next big thing like Uber, even when it has aroused a great interest? I believe it's partly because bike share programs are typically run by nonprofits and have varied missions, ranging from reducing traffic congestion and pollution to improving public health to attracting tourists. On the other hand, Uber is a single, for-profit company with a clearly defined goal: increasing profit. Now let's see if these bike share programs can be considered successful. Like I said before, the primary goals of many bike share programs generally revolve around reducing traffic congestion, boosting public health, and increasing mobility. If these goals are met, then we can say that the programs work and we must support them, correct? Well, here's a fun fact. A 2014 report from the NYC Department of Transportation found that even though some traffic lanes were converted to protected bike lanes on various streets, travel times for car traffic remained steady, even improved. Will bike share programs help reduce traffic congestion, you ask? I say it will. What about boosting public health and increasing mobility? A recent study of New York City bike program in BMJ's journal Injury Prevention revealed that bike shares have a modest but positive effect on overall public health by virtue of the physical activity. Even non-users were said to benefit from increased lifespan because of the reduction in pollution.
Number 41. According to the speaker, how do bike share programs compare to Uber? Number 42. Which is not mentioned as the primary goals of bike share programs? Number 43. Why does the speaker believe that bike share programs can prevent traffic jam? Number 44. How does the speaker illustrate the fast early growth of a bike share program in United States? Number 45. What does the speaker say about bike share programs? Question 46 to 50. Listen to a monologue delivered by a man.
Okay, the last time we met, we ended our discussion by talking about the beginning of an era many called as the Golden Age of Hollywood. It was a period of great growth, experimentation, and change in the industry that brought international prestige to Hollywood and its movie stars. Under the all-controlling studio system of the era, five movie studios known as the Big Five dominated. Warner Brothers, RKO, Fox, MGM, and Paramount. Smaller studios included Columbia, Universal, and United Artists. The Golden Age of Hollywood began with the silent movie era. Though some people say it started at the end of the silent movie age, dramatic films such as D.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation in 1915 and comedies such as The Kid in 1921 starring Charlie Chaplin were popular nationwide. Soon, movie stars such as Chaplin, the Marx Brothers, and Tallulah Bankhead were adored everywhere. With the introduction of movies with sound, Hollywood producers churned out westerns, musicals, romantic dramas, horror films, and documentaries. Studio movie stars were even more idolized, and Hollywood increased its reputation as the land of affluence and fame. During World War I, after President Woodrow Wilson declared war on Germany, the Big Five jumped on the political propaganda bandwagon. Often under pressure and guidance from the Wilson administration, they produced educational shorts and reels on war preparedness and military recruitment. They also lent out their wide roster of popular actors to promote America's war efforts. By the 1930s, at the height of Hollywood's golden age, the movie industry was one of the largest businesses in the United States. Even in the depths of the Great Depression, movies were a weekly escape for many people who love trading their struggles for a fictional, often dazzling world, if only for a couple of hours. Despite the tough economic times, it's estimated up to 80 million Americans went to the movies each week during the Depression. Some of the greatest films made in all of Hollywood history were made in the late 1930s. Anyone can give me an example? The Wizard of Oz? Yes, it was arguably the best fantasy film ever created. But the masterpiece titles include the likes of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Gone with the Wind, Jezebel, A Star is Born, Citizen Kane, Stagecoach, and Wuthering Heights.
Number 46. When did the golden age of Hollywood reach its peak? Number 47. Why did movie industry grow so fast during the Great Depression? Number 48. Which film was not mentioned as one of the greatest ever made in Hollywood history? Number 49. Which movie studio was considered small in the golden age of Hollywood? Number 50. What happened when sound was used in movies for the first time? End of part C.